This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
How worried are you about head knocks in footy? Because the focus on those suffering the debilitating condition CTE has always been on older players, like those at an elite level as well, people who've already retired. But research suggests that this problem could be a lot bigger than first imagined, and it could be players in their 20s who are also suffering the consequences. G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, we're going to talk more about brain trauma from footy and other sport, and I want to hear from you. Like, if you know someone who's maybe had to hang up the boots because of a concussion or a really bad head knock, get in touch, 0439 757 555. Later, we're talking weddings and the shift that seeing grooms take the reins when it comes to putting on their big day.
I don't think all vendors are quite used to the groom being as involved as they may be now.
Yeah, get in touch. If you know a groomzilla yourself, I'm keen to hear some stories on that one. First, though.
Hack. Rescuers are in a race against time in Venezuela
on Triple J.
Yeah, hope is fading really quickly in Venezuela, days on from devastating earthquakes. More than 1,400 people have been confirmed dead from the quakes, but almost 50,000 people have been reported missing. Now, locals are desperately doing everything they can to help out, but there's criticism that the Venezuelan government hasn't been responding to the disaster appropriately. Ariana Lachente has this update.
For days, rescuers have been digging and pulling people out from underneath rubble after two earthquakes 39 seconds apart hit Venezuela last week. Right now, locals and rescue teams are locating survivors as friends and family search for loved ones, like Carlos, who's volunteering.
I saw a friend post that he needed help, so I decided to come and support him. There is hardly any chance of survival for his family, though. Despite that, we are still here, looking for his sister, her husband, and her daughter.
Carlos is in La Guaira, a city along the northern coast, which was hit hardest by the magnitude 7.2 and 7.5 earthquakes. At least 1,450 people have been killed as of Saturday local time. But the US Geological Survey says more than 10,000 deaths could be possible.
Right now, it's a mad dash to try to save as many lives as possible. As you know, it's been several days now. And the fear, of course, is the likelihood of finding more people alive is diminishing over time.
At least 33 people were rescued over the weekend, but up to 50,000 people have been listed as unaccounted for.
The first priority for all the system now is search and rescue. It's true that the very first 72 hours are crucial.
With disasters like earthquakes, you'll often hear experts talking about something called the golden window. It's the first 3 days or 72 hours after the incident to rescue people. After that, the likelihood of finding people alive starts to decrease.
You know, hope is dimming a bit now that we're so far into it. So now it's just a matter of trying to find any last person who might be alive and then, of course, turning to the recovery.
Craig Redmond is from Direct Relief, a group supporting teams on the ground.
Every time there's another aftershock, you have to wait to see how bad is it going to be. They have canine units. Those dogs are amazing and they're well-trained. They know exactly what they're looking for. And if there is anyone in there still, they'll find them.
That's Jorge Rodriguez, president of Venezuelan National Assembly, and he's calling this the most brutal natural disaster Venezuela has ever experienced in its history. But the country was already in an economic crisis, and locals are angry about the government's response. Families and volunteers had been pulling survivors and bodies from the rubble before more than 2,000 foreign rescue workers arrived. There are reports that state workers took selfies in front of collapsed buildings and left without helping, with frustrated locals blocking excavators trying to leave disaster sites. Venezuela's interim leader, Delcy Rodríguez, says police and military have been sent to La Guaira to manage that chaos. We have also decided to militarize that state. As you can see, armed forces have been deployed across the state to handle this difficult situation, which is affecting our people.
This is going to be a major test of her very fragile government.
You might remember in January this year when US forces arrested and seized Nicolas Maduro, the former Venezuelan president, charging him with narco-terrorism. Delcy Rodríguez has been leading the country in the interim, but
she's been heckled by a lot of very angry citizens who say her government simply hasn't done enough.
Countries from all over the world are stepping in, sending search and rescue teams to Venezuela, along with millions of dollars of aid. On the ground, people are calling out names of loved ones and listening for any signs of life. Bria Burkholz from Direct Relief says the attention right now is focused on finding survivors, but the impacts will be felt for many months.
One thing that we see in disasters of this magnitude is 2 to 3 months later is truly when we start seeing the most spike in need for mental health support. That's when people start to realize, you know, what has happened.
Hack on Triple J.
Ariana Lucente reporting there. And if you do want updates on what is going down in Venezuela, ABC News, Triple J News will have all the up-to-date developments from that country, and we'll also keep you across the big ones as well.
This is Hack.
What drives CTE risk is exposure to repeated head impacts.
On Triple J.
Yeah, over the past few years on Hack, we've been speaking more and more about the impacts of concussion on footy players especially. But it's not just footy players, it's all kinds of sports. And usually we're talking about those who retired decades ago, like those who've maybe felt the impacts of CTE, a progressive neurodegenerative brain disease. But an ABC Four Corners investigation is looking into whether this problem could be much bigger than previously thought, with CTE also impacting players in their 20s and 30s, and not just at the elite level either. Look, it's led to calls from players and families to do more to protect those in the game. With us is Jessica Halloran, who is the reporter on this story, and she has been spending quite a bit of time getting into the detail here. Jessica, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Just remind us, what is CTE, and is it just concussion that causes it?
No, it's definitely not a concussion-related disease. It's a disease related to the number of repetitive hits you've had in your time playing, say, footy, heading the ball in soccer. And the more hits you have, the more risk you have of developing this degenerative brain disease called CTE.
And so what have you found out about CTE potentially impacting young footy players?
Well, what the Australian Sports Brain Bank have discovered is that CTE is affecting people younger than ever before here in Australia. We're talking players in their 20s and 30s. And one of them was 23-year-old Nick Loudon, who was an Australian rules footballer, and he was a gun. He was like this fantastic young talent.
What happened with Nick?
Well, Nick, he grew up playing in Traralgon. He played for a club called Combined Saints. He won 5 Best and Fairest. And look, they knew he was going to be good. And he was picked up by Vic Country. He played rep footy there. And then he later was selected for the Gippsland Power, which is this elite AFL junior team. And it's sort of like the gateway to the AFL. So he was well on his way. He sustained one devastating concussion. He obviously sustained a number of knocks.
And so how did they find out that Nick had CTE?
Well, Nick tragically died by suicide when he was just 23. But in the lead up to this had expressed that there was something wrong with his brain. He was going to his mum, Kerry, "I don't know what's wrong with me. Why aren't I like everybody else? I'm not sure why I can't get out of this depression." He said medication's not working, psychologists aren't working. He concentrated on eating well, living well, and exercising, but he really could not get on top of these depressive thoughts.
Let's hear a little more from Nick's mum, Kerry.
"We noticed over the next 12 months he started to deteriorate. He'd keep getting flu-like symptoms.
Sensitivity
to light. Mood changes, depression. He was also a little bit quick to anger. We were like, what's this? I just can't believe that we didn't know about it and that the general public don't know about it.
And CTE can only be diagnosed after death, is that right?
That's right. At this point in time, it can only be diagnosed post-mortem. And so that's why the Australian Sports Brain Bank are really relying on the generosity of the public to donate their brains after they die.
So Nick's brain was donated. That's how they discovered it. Did someone go to the family and request that? Is that how it happens?
Yes. So the coroner requested it and Tony initially said, no, I don't want that to happen. I want Nick to be whole. And then Kerry and their daughters, they all sort of had a meeting about it and said, look, I think we should donate his brain so scientists can look into depression more. They'd never heard of CTE, as you just heard in that clip. And when they were told about CTA, they were like, well, why didn't we know about this? They're really calling on the AFL to do more to educate the general public on this issue.
Was that a common sentiment from players and families that they feel like they're not aware of the risks?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time at country footy clubs, suburban clubs, talking to mums on the sidelines, and there is a general kind of information knowledge gap when it comes to CTA. Many people don't know about it. And there's people like the Fifth Quarter, which is this grassroots movement run by former Carlton great Ken Hunter and another man called Peter Venables, and they're trying to really get people educated around player welfare and concussion and CTE.
Are there any links between CTE and mental health, depression, substance abuse? Like, are those links quite clear in your discussions with doctors and experts?
Yes. Dr. Michael Buckland has made that very clear, that the symptoms of CTE can kind of present them as mental health kind of episodes. They include anxiety, memory loss, very poor impulse control is another one. He also spoke about addiction in our program. Drug addiction can sometimes be as basically a side effect of CTE, that people are self-medicating and the impulse control is so affected around drugs that they often use them and abuse them.
Is there anything people can do if they feel like maybe they're showing symptoms, signs of this?
Well, experts would say go to your GP, go and seek out a medical professional to try and understand what is going on for you. But what they're saying is there needs to be more education in this space, absolutely, and it'll help everybody.
Yeah. What's the AFL had to say?
The AFL have said they're doing all they can. Like last week, they said they'll be reducing contact in training for the men's pre-season coming up. But experts will say that needs to go further, that there needs to be reduced contact in training for kids, like kids shouldn't be tackling until they're 14, experts are suggesting.
It feels like this is pretty significant stuff, Jessica. I mean, it must have also been a really heavy story to be covering and to speaking to so many people who've either lost loved ones or who are concerned about loved ones who are still playing.
I would have to say in my 25 years of journalism, which has mostly been in sport, that this story, particularly Nick Loudon's story, has been the most heartbreaking story I've covered. It is really awful to hear the likes of Nick Loudon and Adam Hunter really wrestling with their mental health and not sure why or what is happening and, you know, trying to seek out help but not getting the help that they need. And it's devastating for these families too. The impact, they feel it to this day, and it is horrible.
If you do want to read more, it's on ABC News Online. You can also watch Four Corners on ABC Television tonight and on YouTube as well. For now, ABC reporter Jessica Halloran, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
And we've got a lot of messages coming through. Someone's saying, I have an ex who played footy among other sports. She got 6 concussions before the age of 19 and it was really heartbreaking to watch what they did to her. I always wondered if some of the difficulties she had might have been caused by the repeated head traumas. It's a really scary thing to think about. Another person on the text line saying, my dad spent the majority of his life playing football and soccer. He was good at heading the ball, so he did that a lot, and he now has frontal lobe damage, which has been connected to this. We've also got on the line with us Aidan O'Driscoll. Now, Aidan was with the Western Bulldogs until he was retired by the AFL on medical grounds 2 years ago after he suffered a really serious head knock. Aidan, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Look, I know this is probably really hard to speak about, but what happened to you in that first practice match a few years ago?
Yeah, it certainly is really hard to speak about. But I got drafted in at the end of 2023, November, pick 55 to the Western Bulldogs. And I sort of went over as soon as I got picked up. And then, yeah, pre-season training kicked off pretty quickly, got into the groove of things. I was really fit, feeling my absolute best, put on 7 kilos in a month or so, and won the 2K as well. So I was feeling really good about myself. And then it came to about the end of pre-season training. We were getting into heavily involved in match simulations, and it was the week before we were actually going to verse Hawthorn, and it was an intra-club game. I remembered kicking a goal in the first quarter, and then it hit the midway through the second quarter, and all I remember is waking up in the ambulance and to be told I've just been knocked out by the club doctor, called mum on the line, and yeah, explained it to her, and I was really dazed. I was like, how did I get to this position where I was laying down in the ambulance? It was really scary and overwhelming at first. I was just really not with it, obviously being knocked out for 10 minutes and having a 2-minute seizure.
Wow.
Would have been scary by all the players. Everyone said it was the biggest hit they've ever heard or seen. People said they were hearing it from streets down the road, which would have been pretty insane.
Wow. I mean, so it was clear that damage had been done pretty early on. Do you know how much damage, Aiden?
Yeah, so what I found pretty poor in my case is the fact that I went back to training and I was feeling really good about myself. Like, I was still really fit and I didn't really have any symptoms at the start post the hit, because I went to the hospital straight away and I spent 2 days in there, and then I was back into training sort of 5 days after, running on the sides, lifting weights still. I was feeling all good about everything, and then I just kept getting told it was going to be maybe like a couple more weeks, a couple more months, maybe even at the end of the year you'll have to wait. And so I'm still feeling pretty good. I'm feeling like I'm going to get back like every other kid does. And I sort of had the independent panel discussion with the AFL and all the medical experts, and they've had an MRI on my brain, and they've said, unfortunately, we recommend to never play contact sport again because there was 8 micro hemorrhages on my brain.
Wow, 8 from one massive, massive hit.
From one hit, and they've said it's one of the most damaged brains they've seen from AFL players, which is pretty insane to hear considering it was one hit, and all these other AFL players are receiving like multiple, maybe 5+, and yeah, their damage isn't even as bad.
Do you feel like you understood, Aiden, like as a teenager when you were getting ready for this career, what the risks were?
Definitely not. No, I didn't understand CTE or really what a concussion could do in general to the brain. Obviously, I knew like you can be concussed and then have a couple of weeks off and then get back into it. That's genuinely what I thought it usually meant. But I knew obviously it's a contact sport, so you're bound to get a concussion eventually. I didn't realize it would have this impact and this effect on my life and who I am today.
Is there a lot of impact that you're still feeling today? Like, do you still have side effects? How's your life looking at the moment?
Yeah, well, listening to the story by Jess Holler and just saying, that definitely makes a lot of sense. And that's a bit of that is what I'm suffering at the moment. Mental health has been probably at my all-time low. It's been really difficult for me to sometimes get out of bed some mornings to find motivation to seize the day and to do anything sometimes. And I don't know what, like, it's much deeper to like being away from footy. It's genuinely how my brain's been triggered from this hit, I feel. And I really have been affected with my memory and lots of other little things as well. Like, I get dizziness, I get brain fog, but my memory and my overall mood have definitely been the hardest things I've had to overcome throughout literally every day since my concussion.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to hear that, Aidan, but really thankful that you were able to come and have a chat with us and open up about some of this stuff, because I can tell from the messages we're getting on our text line now that there are others who have very similar stories to yours. They're saying, I've noticed this in myself or a loved one. So, yeah, you're definitely not alone. Aidan, thank you so much for joining us.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. I hope this helped.
Yeah, and so many people are still messaging in. Someone saying AFL needs to be serious about the implications of such a hard contact sport. Another person says, as a girl playing footy when I was younger, the education around safe tackling was just not there. I had two severe concussions and told I couldn't play contact sport ever again. And then someone else saying, I do a medieval combat sport. CTE is a big discussion in our sport. Lack of concern or even knowledge by some people is scary. All right, we're going to move on.
Hack. I don't know what grooms need to hear this, but I've been helping out with the wedding planning from the start. It's actually much easier than they make it out to be.
On Triple J.
Yeah, we're going to switch it up now and talk about the happier days in people's lives and a wedding. It's something that some people spend months, years, decades even planning for. Is it something you think a lot about, what your wedding might look like one day if you want to get married? Because history tells us it's the brides that generally do most of the planning if there's a bride and a groom, whether the brides want to or not. But are grooms increasingly taking over the reins for their big days? Like, are men getting into wedding planning a bit more? If you know a groomzilla, get in touch. Maybe it's you. You decided you wanted to take more of a role in planning the wedding. 0439 757 555. Jackson Worthington has been speaking to a few young couples about how they've divided up the work.
You are now man and wife.
When Tom and Beck got married, there were a few people who couldn't make it.
I grew up in Australia, but I'm originally from Canada. A lot of my family still lives overseas.
One of them was Beck's grandma.
Although I cannot be with you in person, my heart is with you on this, your special day.
But Tom made sure that even though she couldn't be there, she was still part of the ceremony.
Welcome, Tom, to our family. You may now kiss your bride.
Like, everybody that was there for the ceremony basically went, that's when I broke. And it was just because of the look on my face when I was just like, oh my God, it's my grandmother. And then I started sobbing.
The surprise at the altar wasn't the only thing Tom planned when it came to the wedding. He's one of a growing number of young guys who are getting really hands-on in the planning process.
This was as much my day as it was hers.
Tom never thought about leaving everything to Beck. He wanted to make sure the day was a celebration of everything they both loved. He wanted board games for people to play while they got photos, Eurovision music, and even jump behind the DJ decks during the reception.
I have a very particular taste in music, so our first dance song was to that genre of music, as well as the DJ playing that music before I then got up and DJed as well.
You were very much looking at sort of the end goal and like the experience of, you know, our party.
I picked the first song. I helped organise all the entertainments of DJs and having games and stuff out for people to play. Like, it was all things that I loved that I wanted included.
Zoe is the creative mastermind and I execute.
Zoe and Miles are at the opposite end of the planning process to Tom and Beck.
The whole point of a wedding in our perspective is like a celebration of us. I think there's a lot of things that are very traditional that we don't resonate with, and we're trying not to get stuck in the ideas of planning a wedding that is just a wedding built for someone else.
They're getting married next August in Melbourne and have been documenting their experience on social media.
I started trying to figure out how to approach this planning thing, and I went to TikTok, as one does, and everything was for brides.
They're talking about everything from venue tours.
I think we found it.
I think so.
I think we found it.
To wedding non-negotiables.
All I really want is a saxophonist and good food. And one of our things at the venue was that we wanted a good view.
I want our wedding to show our personality and also just to be fun.
Zoe cares about things like how many outfit changes there are, and there's an idea of cutting a cake with a sword. Mm-hmm. It's the finer details.
Having ice cream involved. Like, right. Yeah, the things that matter to me.
Miles is handling a lot of the planning.
I'd be incredibly stressed if I had to plan an event for 100 people.
Which he reckons some wedding vendors find a bit strange.
It has been interesting. I don't think all vendors are quite used to the groom being as involved as they may be now. We've had some that have been really, really lovely, but some that have also continuously asked Zoe a question over and over, despite it being very obvious that I'm the only person that has the answer.
Do you have any advice for vendors after going through this process?
Ask
instead of assume.
People.
Who's looking after what? Who do I speak to about what thing instead of just going to the bride?
Hack on Triple J. Jackson Worthington reporting there and hearing from you on the text line. Someone says, as an ex-groom, I had two jobs for the wedding, the venue and the cake. Our venue was at an art gallery and the cake was inspired by Lego. I really enjoyed it. I love that. Someone else saying, maybe they're not groomzillas or bridezillas. Maybe they're just really organised. True. We don't want to hate on people who just know how to get an event planned, because it's a real skill. Some people make a whole career out of it. Well, joining us on the line now is Candice Bitter, who's a marriage celebrant and works in Perth and across Western Australia. G'day, Candice. Thank you so much for your time.
G'day, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Are you seeing this trend in your line of work, like men becoming more involved in wedding planning?
Right on. I'm so here for it too. It's been a long time coming. We've been waiting for these fellas to feel empowered, and part of that's on the industry, making sure that the industry and the wedding planning process is a welcoming space for them too. But you know what? Things like flowers are objectively beautiful, cake is objectively tasty, and good times are for everyone.
Yeah, it's so true. And I mean, it's kind of sad to hear in that story just before some of the grooms saying, yeah, it was when we were approaching people, they just wanted to speak to my fiancé or bride. They didn't want to speak to me about stuff. I mean, we've been speaking a lot about heterosexual couples, but I know you also do a lot of queer weddings. What is it like with those couples? Like, do you often see one person take the lead more than the other, or is it a fair distribution of tasks?
Yeah, typically it doesn't really matter what gender the couple presents as or what they identify as. There tends to be one person who leads on the planning in general and one person who has a bit more of a chill presence, who's more of the problem solver in the background. So regardless of gender and regardless of the type of relationship, that's definitely a dynamic that comes through.
Why do you think it is that we are seeing more grooms take an active role in this?
Oh, because it's cool, because there's so much to see and do. And I think that gender roles in general in society are not what they used to be. Gender as a construct is being broken down, I feel, by the generations coming through. There are less expectations on themselves and on others. And, yeah, it's really not a genitalia-based situation getting married. So, yeah, divvying up the labour makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, we've got a lot of messages coming through on this. Someone says, wouldn't it be great if groomsmen gave this as a gift to their partner? Women do so much and this shouldn't be extraordinary. It's the basics. Yeah, a lot of people saying that. Why is this so extraordinary? But it is interesting because, you know, it maybe is something that we haven't seen for a lot of years, but there does seem to be a little shift now in men taking a more active role in wedding planning. Another person saying, women do enough. Men need to level up. I'm interested as well, Candice, in the style of weddings that you're seeing, like, because we know that we are seeing people struggle a bit, especially younger people in their 20s trying to afford a home, all that kind of stuff. But then we're also seeing a lot of lavish celebrity weddings. Think of Charlie XCX, Dua Lipa, that kind of stuff. What are you noticing?
I still see most people that I work with opting for a smaller guest list. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a more budget experience, but cost of living is still very much hitting people very hard. Also, the expectation of having to please others and have a big wedding, that's not as heavy as it used to be in previous generations. People are feeling more confident to have their say and not weigh in on the obligations that they might have previously felt to others.
And have you noticed any groomzillas, Candice? I mean, I know you probably shouldn't use that word, but...
look, there are challenging folks that happen from time to time, but as an industry, I feel like the easiest way to work with people is by making sure they feel heard. So a lot of the bridezilla and groomzilla situations occur when people don't feel heard or supported. So it's up to us as an industry to make sure that these folks are feeling heard, included, that they're opinions, their decisions, their preferences are front and center. And if it, look, it's not possible for budget reasons or another, it's up to us to explain it clearly.
I love it. I feel like if you were planning my wedding, you would be cool as a cucumber. I'd be feeling so not stressed at all. Marriage celebrant Candice Fitter, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Hey, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much.
And we've got a lot of messages still coming through. Someone says, what? Men finally pulling their weight. What a surprise. Also getting a lot of messages still on the CTE story. Someone saying, my partner's 30 and most of the boys on the team still deliberately botch their concussion tests before the season so they don't have to go off during a game.
And that is all we've got time for on Hack for now. I'll catch you next time.